welcome to the sunshine again in Cape Town. We would like to move forward to, before we move forward to the adoption of the agenda, it was our hope we would start with just to close off the National Credit Amendment Bill. Do you recall that? Yes. So, but what we're doing is that SABs were initially asked to be here first, as you know. So let us proceed in that manner. But I'm saying to everyone here, let us be succinct. That applies to each and every one of us. We've done so many preambles, we could actually publish a 400-page book just from the one meeting. Let us avoid that. Our comments are recorded in the media already on this issue. So I would like us to be very succinct as we welcome others. But before we do that, I do want you to adopt the agenda, please. Proposed, Honourable Bulyani, seconded by the Honourable Williams. Now, let us move to the apologies. The apologies are, as you know, the Honourable Mantash, the family bereavement, and the Honourable Elvis has agreed that he will be here, but he'll be arriving late. Okay. I don't have apologies from others, but I'll place on record again so that all parties are clear. Really, Parliament, when it comes to the size of your party, it's a secondary issue, because our priority is legislation. So if you've got one member in your party, your priority is legislation. So because of that, please write a letter to the IFP Chief Whip. You may not attend another committee if you are dealing with legislation in another, or your party cannot deploy someone else to go there. Our core business is legislation, and I must emphasize that. So we know he may be at energy, maybe. Well, there was yesterday, right? And then we also have the Honourable Tlangwini away, and we don't have an apology there. So those are matters that will be addressed. Honourable Khadebe?
Honourable Shepherdson, we still have to report that one off, Honourable Mantashe, because of that bereavement. I think it must always be recorded like that. All right, and then the other one is that Honourable Teko will leave to make the Labour Committee to correct, and then she'll come back again. That's before it is.
I appreciate that often with Honourable Teko on the to correct, but she does return. So thank you very much for taking the legislation seriously. Thank you. Right, we now have the apologies. We also need to look here, and we welcome Acting Chief Executive Officer of SABS, Mr. Garth Strachan, in his new role. And also, of course, we have Ms. Skultz. Is that in a new double role, or is this your full role as co-administrator? Because I know you were originally the Chief Group Chief Operating Officer. So what is it, Ms. Skultz?
It's a double role.
Every time. Now, then we have Dr. Damana. No, have you ever heard of any woman getting double pay? No. Mr. Gunga, co-administrator's assistant, right. Mr. Plykies, chief digital officer. Right. Any relationship to the forebear soul, Plykies? Yes, I hope you'll be singing the national anthem. Then we have the general manager, Mr. Flaten, is that pronounced correctly? Strategy. Right, and others, you know, we'll deal with the others later under the NCAB. I'd like us to begin immediately and to welcome back our researcher, Ms. Madalani. Thank you for returning promptly to your work here after your studies. Is there anyone else that we haven't seen? All right. I'm glad everyone's come to the fore. Without further ado, as I said, please, I am going to be insistent about what you call this preambles. We're not going that route. And this is an appeal to both the ANC and the DA and any other party. So this is the follow-up meeting with SABS. So we're going to engage with them immediately. You do have this, and I would hope, Mr. Strachan, that we're not going to be baffled by page after page of overheads, but that I think you are succinct. Can we please be succinct? Thank you. Is Ms. Scholes going to lead us? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you to all of the honourable members. I think just in a nutshell, our presentation encapsulates questions around the forensic report. There were a number of questions posed by the honourable members, and I think we just want to give a very brief status update in terms of where we are. So, Chair, just some background. I think SABS was placed under administration on the 2nd of July. After due and proper process, the three co-administrators were appointed and the term is until the 31st of January 2019. The Minister accepted the CEO's resignation on the 2nd of August, and our core mandate is to develop, to do a diagnostic analysis of SABS, to develop a turnaround strategy for the institution that would be done in consultation with both the shareholder and with industry. The former members of the board and the former CEO have launched various court applications relating to these processes. Those matters are sub judice, but the Minister, the DGI, and the Bureau of Standards are opposing those. The process to undertake the diagnostic has commenced. With the executive management, there's been a number of engagements with external stakeholders. There's also a program to meet with industry associations. I think most of those are kicking off later this week. And the intention is to develop the implementation plans, both to stabilize SABS as well as to grow the business. So we've looked to date at an analysis of the financial position of SABS and its short and long-term sustainability, some of the institutional arrangements that are in place, and there's also those that are required and necessary, looking at the business model, and then also identify what are the critical burning platforms that need immediate attention. That's looking at the permit backlog. There's been a number of customer client complaints, and then also looking at the whole question around partial testing. So the idea is to also reinforce SAB's core mandate with a special emphasis on conformity assessment and standards. And then also looking at some of the structural issues and the constraints relating to aging infrastructure and the relevance of equipment. So we foresee, Chair, that the diagnostic process is an ongoing process, and the turnaround strategy is going to require a very careful, nuanced process that has a number of interlocking interventions that takes into account the fiscal position of SABS as well as the need for revenue generation. So the immediate interventions which have come which have arisen from this diagnostic relate to the SAB certificates. So there have been a number of outstanding certificates that have been resolved. The permits, the reissuing of permits, that process has been expedited. We also had our audit committee meeting yesterday, and the chairperson had also provided some guidance to the executive in that regard. The processes, the business processes, are being optimized. Some have already been done. With an enabled ICT system to make sure that we minimize this risk going forward. The partial testing decision is under review. There had been a previous decision to stop partial testing, and that is being currently reviewed, and it's receiving urgent attention. It is subject to a number of legal processes and the reinstatement will be done within the relevant protocols and the standards. And I think we will keep the portfolio committee appraised in due course. With respect to stakeholder management, a lot of the key customer complaints and the issues that have been sent through to the DTI have been resolved, and there's a schedule of engagement with industry associations that I think is kicking off tomorrow and during the later in this week. I think there's also a need for SAB to develop an internal and an external media marketing and client management strategy that is aimed at rectifying a particular weakness that we've identified in communication, stronger management of client complaints, both real and perceived, and feedback loops built into the operations of SABs that's being developed and that would be implemented. Two executive positions have been redistributed to the existing executives, enterprise development, corporate services. The existing executives have assisted in just making sure that those core elements are also covered. There are a number of vacancies within the Bureau of Standards, but I think given the financial position of the Bureau of Standards, there's a process to fill the mission, critical ones, and that's currently the subject that's under discussion at the management level. So I think just moving on to the previous questions that have been raised by the Portfolio Committee, the NRCS makes use of SAB's laboratories for the food and health, electrochemical, NEFTA, chemicals and materials, automotive and mechanical sectors. The current challenges that are impacting on the service provided by the by SAB is the long turnaround times for testing of samples, the lack of facilities to test against some standards referenced in the compulsory specifications, and then also the capacity of some labs to perform these tests, including these regulated products. So the way forward is to improve the stakeholder engagement via joint forum and to dedicate SAB's capacity to manage this relationship and these service levels. And then laboratory upgrades would be expedited for the NRCS requirements, and I think there is a plan in place around that. Actually, is a plan in place, I don't think so. Then in terms of laboratory accreditation, there is a process to re-accredit three laboratories in the chemicals, bio, and materials, looking at their, and owing to their physical relocation. This has been delayed due to ensuring that we get stable laboratory conditions. These labs require stable humidity, stable temperature, and getting those conditions right has been something that we've been seized with in the past few weeks. So that process is in its final stages, and the laboratories for mining and minerals, they don't require accreditation. The question around the forensic investigation arose with Minister Rob Davies issuing instruction to the then SABS board to carry out this forensic investigation to the SABS coal testing for the Tegeta Brakfontein mine. The SABS board then appointed a subcommittee to manage this process. There was quite a lot of to and fro, number of delays in implementing the minister's instruction. Sizwa Nsuluba Guboru was appointed on the 4th of May to conduct this forensic investigation. However, this investigation has been delayed by a request for information to ESCOM.
Just mention the name again. Who has been appointed?
Sizwa Nsuluba Guboru.
Okay, right.
And ESCOM have cited that SNG are the external auditors and there is a conflict of interest. So we've expedited that to Minister Davies and to Minister Gordhan to ask them just to intervene because I think we just need the names of the agencies that ESCOM has used in order to proceed with the forensic investigation. So we've had a meeting with the team and with the investigating team, and I think there are further interviews and investigations that they require to do. They will submit a report to us in due course, and then we would forward that to the minister for his consideration. Chair, and I think that is the presentation in a nutshell. Thank you.
Thank you very much, then. We appreciate that FABS is beginning to return to its core business, which is critical for our economic development, trade, industry, and investment. Thank you. Do you wish any one of your team to pursue anything? Otherwise, we're going to engage. Right. Now, members, am I correct? Almost all of you were at the previous meeting. Right. So there's no catch-up mode. Right. Immediately over to you. What I would like is to give you all the opportunity to ask two questions maximum as a start, to try and spend a maximum of 2 minutes speaking. Tiako?
Thanks, Chair.
May I just get the rest of the names? Honourable McPherson, Honourable Buyani, Honourable Hadebe, Honourable Matlobo, in that order.
Thanks, Chair. It's difficult to engage in a report where there are matters which is sub judice. So you will call me into order when I enter that terrain, because I will never know now I'm entering that space. However, Chair, thanks for putting back the SABS on back to track. There's progress now since last. And then the intervention by the minister is welcomed on in this regard. However, on page 5 on the slide, I've got two questions. The stakeholder management, I hear there were customer complaints. What measure complaints you have received as the ones that you are resolving now? Because you just indicate complaints and you're busy, meaning it's a measure, there were complaints, serious complaints. I need to check what type of complaints. And the issue of management operation, you said you have redistributed the existing position to other executives, meaning how efficient is going to be there, and the workload itself. I understand the issue of stability and the continuity, but if there's a vacant position, then you load it to somebody else. What are the impacts, and how are you doing justice to the other roles that the person was doing in the company? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Tiako, also for remaining within the time constraint. Right? And we then have the Honourable McPherson.
Thanks, Chair. Just to say that Honourable Kachalia ceded his questions to me, so I'll take that opportunity, if that's all right, because I think it's quite important. Just to state right at the beginning, Ms. Galtz, that Rule 89 of the National Assembly states that no member may reflect upon the merits of any matter on which a judicial decision in a court of law is pending. Unless there's a decision pending, I would ask that that whatever the details of those court applications by the former members of the board are made public to this committee. Secondly, I want to welcome the appointment of Mr. Strachan to the SABS. I know Mr. Strachan to be a good and honest man, and I think that is going to bring a lot of different change of culture that exists has existed in that entity before. But a couple of questions to you, Ms. Galtz, as you are here representing the DTR. Why did it take so long for the DTR and the Minister to act on this matter? This has been in the public domain for some time, and in fact really came to a fore on the basis of my parliamentary questions that I asked to the Minister, which revealed how bad things had actually got. But it fails me to understand how a member of a portfolio committee seems to have more understanding or more grip of what's going on in that entity than the department did. And it was on the basis of those questions that more scrutiny started getting paid to the SABs. Have any criminal charges been laid, or is there an intention to lay criminal charges against any member of the board or the CFO? And if the problems within the SABs have been known for so long, why has a turnaround strategy not ever been implemented or never been received by the department to date? And then my last question is, you will know that the SABs is currently entered into, not negotiations, but a discussion within the CCMA with 108 employees of the SABs currently. Can you advise if that matter is now going to be settled before the CCMA or outside of the CCMA? And then I'll come back for the second round. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, I do not want questions to be handed over unless members are not in this committee physically, or they have a problem with their voice, which is quite possible with the flu going round. So let's avoid that. Let's avoid it. Honourable Buyani, is it? Yes.
No, thanks, Chair. I just received a question from Honourable Williams. No, thanks very much, Chair. That was on a lighter note. Chair, I'm not so sure, because here we're talking of an issue that is at judicial level, sub judice. So, but...
I'm sorry, what is the problem?
Sorry, Chair, I think it's actually important that you rule on this matter, please. Rule 89 of the National Assembly is very explicit that the sub judice matter only applies to pending judicial outcomes. It does not preclude members from reflecting on the actual issues relating to any case. So I would please ask, and you will know that the Speaker has ruled on this matter previously, that members have been allowed to discuss matters before the courts in the House, and that ruling has been made several times. So I would ask that you reaffirm that ruling, and that this committee is allowed to engage on any legal processes that are before the courts.
This way. And the way I operate is a very simple one. I acknowledge, first of all, that I'm a member of humanity and therefore subject to error. However, I work from the latest rule book, which is what I'm required to do. And under the latest rule book, the 9th edition, it says matters sub judice 89. No members may reflect upon the merits of any matter on which a judicial decision in a court of law is pending, if on the matters that have been, questions that have been asked, they are not covered by this, they may be answered, of course. Any matter which is before the court and is pending, no, I'm not going to allow engagement, but that is what I am going to pursue. And until I am, as I am working in the office of the Speaker, all chairs do, we are deployed, until I hear anything in writing or see anything in writing addressed to the contrary, that is what I will have to do. Honourable Easterhazen.
Good morning. My apologies for being late, Madam Chair. I was held up in some party business. I just want to
carry on what Honourable McPherson said, that why was it taken so long? Now, I think that the SABC...
I thought you were talking to the ruling. Other hands are up before yours, Honourable Esther Hazen, so I will recognise you when that is over.
Okay.
Honourable Boyani was actually on the floor, so please complete your question, and then followed by Honourable Hadebe and Honourable Maslobo.
No, thank you very much, Chair, for the protection. Chair, here, there's, as I said earlier on, that there's, this matter is sub judice, okay? And also, I wanted to check, man, because we're talking of forensic investigation, and also we're talking of disbandment of the board, and also the appointment of a new co-administrator here. So, but this thing, in my understanding, they are not like one of the issues. Because if you talk of a forensic investigation, you must be able to have an outcome of that investigation. I think that outcome of the investigation must be also followed by disbandment and other issues. But there's no investigative response in terms of the investigation, and the investigation still yet to come. But currently we're told that there's an interim board or coordinators that are there. So myself, I'm beginning to not to understand clearly what is happening here. Maybe if I can get more clarity on this matter, yes. And also, Chair, because the investigation is talking of SAPS certificate that was given to someone somewhere, some else. But here now, we're continuing in terms of this report to give those outstanding certificates to people. How sure that those certificates are not part of that one that they investigate? And also the partial testing, because here you remember we talked about the SAPS certificate and also the testing. How sure are we about the results of the testing? Are we still not part of the
Comrade Chair, and we welcome the presentation by the team, by the co-administrators, Chair. Just to advise the team that, you know, the matter of the investigation, I don't think, despite the challenges, the institution, because I don't want to speak about the co-administrators, I don't think it's getting the necessary agency it deserves. Because even the last time when we met here, we raised the issue that the investigation has taken much longer than anticipated. And my suggestion is that when there are matters like we are raising of conflict of interest, why would we actually be trying to get ministers getting involved? Because an opinion in law, it's a legal matter now. Why don't you sort out a legal opinion so that at least the point of dispute about the conflict of interest is laid to rest as a dispute mechanism? Because the more you do this, and executive, they don't have time in the main to deal with these issues. And then secondly, because the matter is subject to other issues that impacted on the big institution like ESCOM and the other issues, has there been an approach to law enforcement agencies that while you are doing your own forensic investigation, they must come up, they must look at the matter, because already the matter has been in the public interest, Chair? And then lastly, the points you have raised at the beginning, where you raise the key issues around stakeholder engagement and other issues, trying to stabilize the organization. Probably in future, Chair, if the team can come back and a more detailed action plan, so that at least we can have a sense that the issues that were starting to harm your reputation, there are clear timelines, how are you doing about them. But it's a good point that we have put some areas of focus to say let's stabilize the organization, both in terms of engagement, the operations, including the technical capability
right.
of the institution. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mahlobo. Honorable Khadebe, I'm sorry I overlooked you.
No problem, Chair. Thanks a lot, Chairperson. I also concur with my colleagues in welcoming the report. You know? But I'll be fair, Chair, that sometimes this committee or staff have been called too early to come to report to the portfolio committee. While, quote the first thing, part of the turnaround strategy will be based on a forensic investigation which must be undertaken. Because whatever strategy they're going to put in place, it will be incomplete unless they get an official record what has transpired and what how they can do that. But what I want to emphasize, Chair, is that I'm interested more on the entire administrators as they are appointed. I'm not going to go only for Mr. Strachan, that he's the one who's good. I'm telling you, all of you are good. We've got confidence in the whole team. We know that as a unit, you are going to turn this thing around. All of you, you are in good space. But what I'm interested in, Chair, in moving forward, because there are certain things which can be done now, I see that there are vacancies. Is there no way in filling those vacancies by using the interns who are doing MSc or PhD in science in various universities so that they can plug the gap, because they are not going to be drained to the salary bill of this thing because they'll be interns. And then, as I said, Chairperson, I think that it is too early. I think that let's give them a chance. Let's say by early next year they come back and then give us a heads up what's going on. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Khadebe. Honorable Esther Hazen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Unfortunately, I've missed the presentation. But I'm also just a little bit concerned that Mr. Coco gave a clear indication that Brakfontein was giving a clear bill of health on the coal. And for me, it's then very worrying that the South African Bureau of Standards failed to perform.
Honourable Esther Hazen, can I just ask you, now I do know who you're referring to, but I'm the chair, and I may know this. I've got people alongside me. When we say Mr. Coco, just specify who you are referring to precisely. I do know it's coming from an inquiry, but be more specific.
Okay. Mr. Coco was the then acting head of the Eskom board at the time. But he was indicating that Brakfontein was giving a clean bill of health. And I think then, for taking all this time, then South African Bureau of Standards had failed to perform in terms of their mandate and their obligations after so long that this only comes to light now. It is really a problem for me. Thank you.
Now, as we turn to SABS, as team leader there, Ms. Skolts, will of course field the questions as she wishes. But I think one of the things which we must point out, and I think you did touch on it, Honourable Khadebe, we asked for them to return with at least a framework of their turnaround strategy. We insisted on that. We gave them the time, etc. But I think what is clear is that while you may begin your turnaround strategy and lay a few planks out, this is what we know we're going to have to do, we are going to have to re-engage. So let us accept that as well, that we will re-engage on the matter. I won't be taking more hands. We will be coming back. On what I have said.
Chair, I want to just bring to your attention with respect to Rule 89 before Ms. Galt's response, because it is important. Because in the 2004 Guide to Procedure, it indicates that the Chair should apply the rule, that's Rule 89, in such a way as to impose the minimum limitation on open debate. And this means that members should be allowed to refer to a matter before a court, but cannot discuss the merits of a matter before a court. Members should not say anything that tries to predetermine the outcome of a case or content on matters that are part of evidence before a court. So I would ask that you rule that Ms. Schultz can discuss what the nature is of the court application and what is behind that, and that we proceed on that basis, because the rules of to procedure are quite clear on that matter. And if you choose to rule against that, I would then ask that you please seek an urgent opinion from the Parliamentary Legal Advisor, because it is critical to the role of this committee that we understand what is before the court with respect to the opposing papers of the former board.
Perhaps the rule is not very clear. I will reread it, and then we will abide by this rule. You have, in fact, said more or less what this rule says. No member may reflect upon the merits. That is quite clear. That is what this rule is saying. Nothing more, nothing less. And I would appeal to all members now to begin to listen clearly to a ruling on any matter. So we are talking about the merits. Nothing more, nothing less. And that is the rule that I will implement. Honorable Khadebe.
Chairperson, we appreciate what you are saying. Ne? But what is very important, Chair, is that this meeting is open. The records of this meeting are going to be public. But what we must also be aware of is that once we entertain any issue concerning this thing, whatever evidence which might be provided here can no longer be used in the court of law, because it can no longer be used. Yeah. No, ma'am. Who's the chairperson? Who's the chairperson? It can no longer be used, chairperson. It's a fact. It cannot. So what we must do here? We must not pressurize the presenters into a corner. I think that we must give them an option, because they know the merits of the case. They know what. If they feel that this thing is going to hamper their work in court, really we cannot force them to disclose it here in this meeting. Thank you, Chair.
That, Honourable Khadebe, because I don't want to delay the meeting, what I can say is that this principle came up with the Steinhoff issue, and we will hear more about it from the legal staff of Parliament there, and all members of the committee will be there in attendance. But what I am saying is members may raise these issues except as I pointed out. That is the only issue I am ruling on, Honourable Kacharya. So I don't want to comment on whether the Honourable Khadebe is correct or not.
May I just remind you of a precedent that was set in a related matter in the Public Enterprises Committee last year, when Minister Brown was being questioned, then Minister Brown was being questioned, and the committee chairman there then said that despite it being sub judice, she would have to answer what the members of the committee asked. That, and there was contention that sub judice rule was archaic, but that was moot. But the point was that was precedent, and that was there. And that matter, in terms of public enterprises, is related to this matter. So I just bring your attention to that. Thank you.
Now, I do appreciate that, Honourable Kacharya, but may I just indicate, in the final analysis, the Chair has the discretion. That is my interpretation, that, yes, when it comes to the merits of the case, which is more or less what has already been said in the committee, I have also indicated that we will be returning on this matter. This is open, it is not closed, and I do want members to be able to interrogate critical issues, yes. But this is, and some of you may have forgotten or may not have been at the meeting, this is just a broad overview that we are getting as an interim report. We are going to allocate 2.5 hours when things, we have got a bigger report on the matter. But at your request, it was important to get some sort of early understanding as to where the department was taking this. So I don't want to now create the impression that this is a major time. Look at the time we've allocated. We allocated, what was it, 1.5 hours. If we were going to undertake everything, we would have allocated 3 hours. We know we're not in that position, and neither is the team in front of us. So I do want members to ask their questions as openly as possible, and I also would like the department to respond to the questions and comments as openly as possible. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I think I'll try and tackle the questions and group them as best as I can, and then I've also got a team that would come in and support. I think just in response to Honourable Teko, I think the major complaints around the relates to the time it takes to test. But I think Ian can give some detail about that. We will also, I think, reference that in the annual report, the complaints that have been received. The redistribution of the executive positions, there were two positions that needed to be redistributed. It was enterprise development and corporate services. Mr. Ian Plaikis had been acting as the chief digital officer, and he had also had the corporate services position before. And then in the discussion with the executive team, it felt he would be a capable caretaker of that. I think what's given us some comfort is that at a general management level, the majority of those posts are filled. So it just requires executive oversight and trying to steer, make sure that those areas are adequately steered. So the level below executive, that's filled, and that's given us some comfort. And then I think the same with the enterprise development. Dr. Sadvir Basun, thank you, has also had experience in that space, and there are competent general managers and senior managers that report into him. I think just with respect to Honourable McPherson's matter, the basis of the legal challenge has been questioning our appointment as well as the removal of the board. We have opposed that. We have not filed our affidavits as yet. I think that would be filed in the course of next week. And I think once we've filed that would be a matter of public record, Chair, that could be made available to the committee. The Minister of Trade and Industry, and I'm wearing my SABS hat here. I have many hats, Chair. Had appointed, I think, Garth, myself, Shabir Khan, the CFO at the DTI, and a number of other colleagues to be on a task team to work with the SABS management team to develop a turnaround strategy. There was a work that had been done with TIPS to look at the acts, at their core mandate. So the minister has consistently been intervening in SABS, and I think his decision to place SABS under administration and has come as a result of the teams working and providing him with reports. In terms of the criminal charges, we haven't received the final forensic report, and so those matters, as soon as we get the report, I think once we've consulted with the minister, we will then take the relevant action. With respect to the SABS matter of the 118 employees, the matter is before the CCMA tomorrow, but I think, Ian, if you could just come in and just assist on that. I think Garth will deal with the forensic investigation and relating to the test. And then I think, Honorable Maklobu, thank you very much. I think we'll I'll take your comments just as inputs into our processes and helping to guide us. So thank you very much. And we do we will come back and indicate the plan. The team has already got that plan, but I think once we've implemented and details are coming out, because I think industry associations are quite hungry for this intervention. Che, I think Honorable Khadebe, thank you very much. I think in trying to steer the ship and looking at the vacancies, we're mindful of the financial position of SABS, and we are exploring all kinds of options in terms of supporting existing capacity. So I think that is an avenue that we can look at. Thank you very much. But I'll hand over to Garth, to Ian, to Nils, and to Chenge for further comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With respect to the questions asked in relation to the delay of the forensic audit, I think it would be safe to say that the delay is problematic, number one. The Minister of Trade and Industry instructed the then board of the South African Bureau of Standards to undertake a forensic investigation, to appoint a service provider to undertake a forensic investigation. That required that the terms of reference be developed by the then SABS board and signed off by the shareholder, the Minister of Trade and Industry. After due procurement process was followed by the then board, Siswe and Saluba Gobodo were appointed and began their investigation. The critical issue has been the fact that Eskom have suggested that because Siswe and Saluba Gobodo are the external auditors of Eskom, there would be a conflict of interest between being an external auditor and a forensic auditor. We have met with Siswe and Saluba Gobodo, and their view was, Madam Chair, that there wasn't a conflict of interest because external audit and forensic are separate business units. The co-administrators raised the matter then with the Minister of Trade and Industry, who, in our understanding, has engaged with the shareholder of Eskom, namely Minister Pravin Gordhan, the Minister of Public Enterprises, and that this matter of a suggested conflict of interest is resolved, and that the forensic audit be expedited as soon as possible, and those interviews hitherto not completed with employees of Eskom, and we should, I suppose, bear in mind that there's been a subsequent National Treasury report, and there may need to be an engagement with the National Treasury that process will be expedited. In summary, I think we would agree that the process has taken too long. There have been complex legal matters involved, and I think the administrators have been very careful to ensure that if you make a legal mistake, you may jeopardize the credibility of the investigation itself, and therefore we have exercised utmost prudence in this regard.
Is there anyone else? Yes, Mr. Plaikie.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'm going to address the question of Honourable McPherson's CCMA matter. The case will be heard tomorrow. I need to stress that originally there was 118 managers, and the issue originally was the paying out of the bonuses of 2016-17 the delinking of the salary. The salary increases was attached to performance of individuals in the organization, and an increase in the percentage of the bonuses. All three of those matters have been addressed and is no longer on the table. However, there are a few managers still left. I don't know what the number is. We'll know tomorrow, but it's not 118. That has got additional demands that is unreasonable, and we will not be settling out of the CCMA matter or case, and we will be defending it tomorrow, and we have very high prospects of success on that. I think it's worth mentioning just on Honorable Khadebe's, the issue around the validity of the certificates in relation to the certificate that was issued for ESCOM. The two are not related. It's two different services that we offer. The ESCOM matter is not a certificate. It's a test report. So we tested coal and we gave a test report. The issue of permits that is expired is a very rigorous process that we're going through, and that's why it has taken a longer period of time, where we ensure that we go and resample the products that we are going to be reissuing permits for. And so that's why there's two different things, and we can rest assured that the validity of the certificates that we're reissuing is good. Thank you, Chair.
My colleague just reminded me, I think Biani, Honourable Biani, this is in response to your question, apologies. The forensic investigation was a separate matter to Minister dissolving the board. His reasons, and I stand to be corrected, related to the performance of the board and the understanding of the mandate of SAPS. And that's also part of the legal challenge at the moment. The forensic report, I think that came about as a result of the ESCOM inquiry, Chair. I think that's what I wanted to say. Thank you very much.
Now, there was a question raised which perhaps you could have expanded on. I'm not sure which member raised it, but it was around would you be, in fact, retesting everything or whatever, you know, and handing out these certificates, or is it just a few things that you're going to be dealing with? In other words, I think the question was really around the integrity of the certificate. If you could just be more clear on that. I'm not sure who asked it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The issue was raised around, it was called partial testing around that. And Jody mentioned earlier in the introduction and the presentation that we are reviewing that practice at the moment, and we will come back with a response. But I can guarantee the committee that we will definitely be acting in the interest of the public, the manufacturers, and obviously the mark scheme as well. Thank you.
Can I see? I thought I saw Honourable McPherson's hand first, Honourable Buyani, Honourable Esterhazen. Those are three hands that I have up at the moment. Honourable McPherson.
Thank you very much. Ms. Schultz, you mentioned the reason why the Minister removed the board was because of its performance or lack thereof. Now, performance is not something that just one day stops taking place. It's over a period of time, and it's in some cases a gradual decline, or in other cases it's a steep decline. So my question would simply be, why did it take the Minister so long to act if the performance had been declining for so long? And it mirrors a pattern that I think we are seeing across a number of entities. We've seen it happen in the NGB, we've seen it happen in the NRCS, and now the SABS. And that's all within the space of 4 years, or certainly for as long as I've been in Parliament. And that speaks to me of a big oversight problem that exists within the DTI and its entities. So what measures are being put in place in the Sculpts to tighten up
the DTR's oversight and interaction and involvement of its entities, so that performance failures are picked up earlier and are acted on there and then instead of a long, drawn-out process. My other question to you is, will the forensic report, when it's completed, will that be made public? And can you give a commitment to us on that? We know the SABS needs a recapitalization of around 1.6 billion rand. What interactions are taking place with Treasury to secure that funding? And can the SABS function without that recapitalization? And then, Chair, just a comment to you. You will recall at the last time we had the SABS with the previous board, I had actually put to this committee that we should support the minister's decision to dismiss the board, and the committee rejected that. They did not want to support that position. And I'm concerned that this committee has been slow in its parliamentary responsibilities of oversight of entities. And in fact, I'm quite disappointed that we only have an hour and a half and we're sort of just taking a sort of a snapshot of what's going on. And that, coupled with the DTI's and the minister's inability to deal with these issues when they arise, really allow for the problems that take place in these entities. So I really want this to be a lesson for this committee, hopefully, that one, when the minister does act, that the committee actually supports it and doesn't, you know, reject it, as some colleagues chose to do in the first instance. And the second point being that this committee really needs to get its teeth into these entities so we can understand what is going on, because the SABS issue was not something that just happened overnight. It was months and months and months, and the committee chose to do nothing about it. So I think that we really need to re-examine ourselves going forward.
You will see I did allow you a full 1.5 minutes because it is important, the issue, Honourable Macpherson, of individual MPs' oversight. So it's a constitutional obligation as well as the committee. Now, this issue was raised long before the National Gambling Board, as you know. The issue around how effective our oversight is, which is why we called on the service of the Auditor General more and more on the performance issue. And we said, what is it? What are the flags? What alerts an MP who is not a forensic auditor, etc.? What alerts that MP to an issue, an entity not performing effectively at all? What is it? And we tried to actually draw up a list of these issues that when the Auditor General's report came to us, we should query. So when we see an orange light or yellow, nowhere near red, yellow, is there some questions we should be asking at that point? And I would agree with you, Honourable Macpherson, that this does point to a lack or limited or perhaps oversight that is not as effective. But I would ask you to see it from two sides. Yes, the department has an obligation, but every MP here has an obligation as part of its oversight to know when to ask the critical questions. We're doing a post-mortem. We were doing a post-mortem 6 months ago. So really, Honourable Members, we want to try and get in before getting to a post-mortem. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. Let me recognise the other hand that I noted, please. Thank you. The Honourable Esther Hazen.
Madam Chair, thank you. Mr. Strachan is very well known, and he's on record, and 100% so, to say that policy coherence and program alignment is a big constraint in government, and I agree 100% with what he said. But that's why I wasn't saying, he said that the time factor is a concern, but a time factor assessment is, this happened in August 2016. This is now 2018, August. This is, and you know, it also resulted, this test resulted that Mr. Singh, and for the committee's sake, Mr. Singh was the CFO at the time of Eskom, Mr. Singh signed up a guarantee of 1.68 billion rand to get a mining. So there was a lot of consequences from this. And that's why it worries me, and that's why I said that South African SABS didn't act according to their mandate in this specific case. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Honourable Esterhazen, Honourable Buyani. I have seen two other hands. In fact, now I've seen a third hand there. Yes, do go ahead.
No, thanks. Thanks, Chair. I think I'm partially covered with the response. But I think my challenge here is that it's too early for SAPS to come in this committee and respond to some of these issues. Because now SAPS supposed to have terms of reference, turnaround strategies, how they are going to turn around the institution, hence these challenges. Because coming here so early, some questions cannot be clarified. Because here we're told of procurement processes for the forensic investigation that were delayed. And now, if we can check that, we will not get a response. Vis-a-vis the list of those forensic investigations, SAPS forensic investigation, the challenges that you want to investigate at the SAPS, you see, so that we are able to be on par as well as the committee. Hence, I will support the Honorable Hadebe to say, let us give the SAPS maybe some ample time to deal with their issues, then come to the committee and make a presentation that it's convincing. Because here, Chair, there are a lot of issues. I was just given 1.5, but in terms of the presentation, I need clarity in terms of all the issues that are here. But then, given the proposal by Honorable Hatep, I think it suffices to say, let us give SAPS an opportunity to go and make the strategy and come present the strategy so that we know exactly. And also, Chair, last, the Minister, DTI and SAPS, seemingly they are conflicted on the matter. So I'm not so sure what is happening here. If we can propose, Chair, to say, let the DTI, the department, comes with the SAPS and make the presentation when they are coming back here, so that we are able to get exactly what is happening, why the department is conflicted, why the minister, vis-a-vis the appointment, and also these things that are not clarified in the presentation. Thanks very much, Chair.
Honourable Buyani. Honourable Buyani, we not addressed to you specifically. We've got three more hands. The last hand I recognised was Honourable Pachalia, Honourable Maklobo, and in the first round, Honourable Hadebe. Right.
Chairperson, what I want is just an issue of assurance to you as the chairperson that you have run this committee so well, and we know that this committee is performing well. Yeah. So, but what chairperson will never agree is that we cannot conflate this committee with the executive. Those are two separate, per constitution, or very separate. It does not mean that when something comes from the executive, we'll accept it willy-nilly. As we said in the last meeting, there was no letter which was written to you about this issue of SAPS. So this committee, there was no way this committee will accede to that. Yeah. That the information is here in front of us. I think that the right decision are taken, Chair. You are running this committee well. Thank you. That's what I wanted to assure you with. Thank you.
sorry, Honourable Khadebe. At least even though I haven't got long enough arms, I can see your face, Honourable Masilobo. All right.
No, thanks, Comrade Chair. No, I think there are certain things that probably as a committee we should do. One, we should firstly welcome that there has been an intervention in SAFS in terms of the governance challenges, because it's going to be wrong for us when an intervention is made, we don't acknowledge it. An intervention has been made by the executive at the level of stabilizing that there is a board. And at the very same time, there is an administration team, that's why they are called co-administrators. That's an intervention. Progress is being made. Secondly, we should also note, Chair, that this committee never resolved to say we want to interfere on the decision of the minister, like Honourable McPherson is saying. We never made a decision. It's just a podcast statement to create an impression that they are more interested on the matters as opposed to us. Our own minister of the ANC has intervened. Like in other entities, interventions have been made when there's governance and system failures. That's one issue that we must applaud. Number two, the team that has came in is very capable with renowned credentials. But there's not been ample time. They're starting to put the ducks in a row. Therefore, the outstanding matter is to come with a detailed turnaround plan. That they are saying they are working on it, and you can start to see the elements of the plan that they are there. But then the detailed operational plan, whether from systems point of view, the financial position point of view, including the HR issues and so forth, they will have to come back. But we need to be guided how much time can we give them, because it's an important matter. The third element, there were issues that were of grave concern. One matter of grave concern that arose the public interest was the issue of the testing that happened of that particular coal that has led to serious issues that are being discussed. And it's a matter that has been delayed because, one, the procurement took long, but the appointment has been made. That's why I was making the recommendation that it's a matter, it's a legal matter. When people have a dispute, it's a legal matter. You can try to persuade one or the other, but the best option is to say between ESCOM and yourselves and Suze and Zaluba and associate, what is the legal opinion? Then you take it there. But then there are issues that, you know, something has gone wrong. Remember, other matters are being investigated by the law enforcement agencies. Has this matter that had far-reaching implication, has it been reported to law enforcement agencies? Because there is some kind of criminality, perceived criminality, that should have been followed up by law enforcement agencies. We must appreciate that. We need to get an answer on that one, whether are you following that route? On the question of matters of HR insight, I think the team has responded that at least the matter tomorrow is actually at the CCMA, which is what we provided for in our own constitutional democracy, that it is matters. And we'll want to hear the progress, because those issues to us, I think they are very important. The last issue that this committee must note, Chair, the last meeting was a little bit ugly between the previous team and those who are in the administration of DTI. You remember the documents they gave us where we became some quasi kind of an inquirer of some sort, where someone said, no, but this is the information I have, this is the information I have. This committee, probably there are two options, or one option, is to ask the minister to keep the committee abreast on the developments of the right by those who were there before that have taken an option to bring the minister to court. Because remember, we cannot be in a position not to be interested in the documentary documents that were circulated to us that look to be so contradictory. But at least now that they've approached the courts, whether they were fairly treated by the minister or by the department or so forth, right, is the best option to adjudicate that particular matter. I thought let's be able to be succinctly, uh-huh, so that we are not all over the show to say what are we dealing with, But the team must be able to say what is the reasonable period they've committed on the turnaround plan. Let's let them share with us so that we can do our oversight responsibility.
Thank you, Honourable McLaubel. We have the Honourable Kachalia.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think there's a degree of obfuscation here which needs to be put right. The Honourable Schlober has said quite correctly that he welcomes intervention. And to quote him, he said, when intervention is made, we should acknowledge it. Now, I think it must be acknowledged and understood very clearly and said in this committee that as the Honourable McPherson has said, the intervention was tardy in spite of the questions, very relevant questions and issue driving that we, as the DA, my colleague McPherson and myself, have repeatedly done. That's point one. Point two is when the minister, in my view, tardy, but nevertheless, better late than never, took an action, I put forward, you will recall, a motion, a proposal in this committee to support the minister's action. The ANC colleagues on this committee chose not to support it then, and that must be acknowledged. In spite of the fact that Mr. Mashlobo says that when intervention is made, we should acknowledge it, those two facts sit in contradiction of each other, and I think we must understand that very clearly. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Kachalia. I think I should also remind all members of the committee, the minister is required to keep the chairperson informed of such actions in writing. I have not received that letter. And I certainly am not about to say today that I did receive it at the time when I had not. And therefore, I have an obligation as an officer of Parliament to act responsibly within the rules of Parliament and the Constitution. So let us rather agree that members would like to have a stronger and deeper engagement. We would. There isn't a member here who would not. I know that every member, despite the decisions taken on that day, were really disappointed as a mild adjective as to how people were feeling. We were deeply disappointed that an entity that, in our own opinion, up to that moment in time, had been performing so well, in our opinion. It was one of the really the stars, in inverted commas, for its first 10, 15 years. And it did come to us as a major challenge that how is it that such an entity, which appears to be performing so well, how is it that it falls? You know, what are we not doing effectively? Because we are not doing something effectively, if that happens, to the stars. But at least I hope every member has learned from that. But at this moment, let us give direction before the department responds, because it may have to respond on these issues. We do want you to come back, as we indicated before. We wanted an interim. What is happening? What have you done now to stop this hemorrhaging of good governance? So what is happening right now, and how much time? We're a reasonable committee, I believe. How much time do you need, Ms. Schultz or Mr. Strachan, before you can come back with a report to us on the turnaround strategies and also progress in the investigations that have already been requested or embarked upon? Can we get those two clear issues? And it's over to you for comment and response. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, we appreciate the comments from the Portfolio Committee. I just want to iterate the co-administrators. We have been seized with a number of legal challenges. The former board of SABS have also been directors on SABS Commercial, which is a subsidiary of SABS. It's appointed in terms of the Companies Act, and we have on the 27th, Monday, had a shareholder meeting, and we took a decision to remove those directors from SABS Commercial. So there have been a number of steps that we've been taking. It is a bit of a legalistic process, and combined with that, there have been meetings with the executive team. They've been working with us in trying to unpack some of the burning platforms, as I alluded to earlier. I'm going to ask Garth just to deal with the precise steps that the Minister has taken in response to Honourable McPherson's question. But in terms of the DTI, there's a governance framework that is in place that guides the actions of a number of officials from the Minister, the Director General, myself looking at public entity oversight. The DDG is responsible. And one of the things that Minister Davis has taken, I think, about 2 years ago, is also to deploy a number of finance staff onto audit and risk committees so that we are able to get an early warning system on what are some of the burning platforms, what are some of the issues. Minister Davis also meets on a quarterly basis with the Auditor General to look at the entire portfolio, and all of the issues are then raised. And the entities are then called to respond and to give an account. But I think I'll ask Garth just to deal with the specifics around SAB. Honourable Pearson, the forensic report, I think we'll have to engage with that. We don't know what is going to come up, and we'll have to follow the due process in giving appropriate feedback in that regard. Relating to the recapitalization, there haven't been interactions with Treasury as yet. I think we're still in the process of trying to understand what is the exact amount. We're trying to unpack that into short, medium, and long-term strategies and see how we can look at revenue generation to meet some of the more immediate priorities. But I do anticipate that that discussion would definitely take place. We've already engaged with the DTI CFO just to get his initial thinking and support in as we putting this plan together. I think, Honourable Mbuyani, the Minister has been very clear in his terms of reference to us as administrators, do the diagnostic and then develop the turnaround plan, turnaround strategy, and we've been given until the 31st of January to do that. My personal opinion at this stage, I think it may take slightly longer, but I think perhaps Garth can also talk to that. And then perhaps also just around the some of the coal testing issues. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Strach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I suppose officials are often in a difficult space, but suffice to say that I suppose we agree fully with the Honourable McPherson and Kachalia that urgency has to be a watchword. But I would suggest, if I may, that in fact the Minister was absolutely seized with the issue. In fact, without going into too much detail, there was a continuous process of engagement with SABS. There are key moments in that process, and one of them was when the accreditation of SABS was withdrawn by SANAS. In fact, myself and the group COO were engaged in a very long process with the CEO of SABS to understand the problems and to try and address them. The Minister also appointed beginning of 2017 an external team which included academic and legal experts as well as industrial policy experts from Trade and Industrial Policy Studies to undertake a scoping exercise and investigation into the problems real and perceived in SABS and effect a turnaround strategy. As we know, the third key moment in this process was when the Minister instructed the Board to develop a turnaround strategy, which the Board did, but which the Minister felt was unsatisfactory. It was at that point, of course, that the Minister took a decision to place SAVs under administration. I think there are a whole lot of issues that arise that at the management operational level, the financial level, the team has got to do a short-term and medium-term and longer-term piece of work. We've got to look at, for example, things like the shareholder compact. There needs to be a review of the Technical Infrastructure Acts, which my colleague Dr. Damana is going to be driving going forward in the DTI. So I think there has been, the minister has driven a process. Perhaps the process took a long time, but there were complex problems. I do think we need to make the point that, you know, the whole building isn't up in flames, and that actually there is a credible management, some of whom are here with us today, and we have to turn the course of the ship and not fix what isn't broken, fix what is broken, and strengthen the institution to concentrate on its core mandate, which I think Mr. Eerste hasn't spoke to. And the Minister has repeatedly said this to us. The core mandate is conformity assessment and standards, and this will have to be uppermost in all the work that we do as we effect a turnaround strategy. I do want to say that, you know, the idea that we can somehow find 1.6 billion and have a massive, you know, injection is perhaps a, you know, the wrong way of approaching it. That's the total quantum of funds projected which would be required. But we've got to very carefully sequence a process where the operational issues are corrected at the same time as ensuring that revenue generation funds from the public purse are optimally deployed and calibrated with building the necessary capabilities and capacity as SAS is turned around. In other words, we can't throw, you know, money at the problem and think that that will solve it. There has to be a very careful management turnaround strategy, which we are convinced is entirely possible, and that there are men and women of goodwill with significant capabilities in the SAVS management and in the 900 or so staff. And our key plan is to ensure that we work with that management and staff to effect a turnaround, part of which will be the incremental deployment of funds directed at the core mandate, conformity assessment and standards, deployed judiciously, taking into account that SAVS has a public good mandate, for which the public purse is used to service that core mandate. It also has a commercial mandate, which of course is also...
Will you just pause there for a moment? There is something circulating in the committee related to the announcement yesterday about the Secretary of Wales. All you need to do is to write your name there if you can come. That's all. Can we then, I don't think it needs any discussion. It's not compulsory, but it's encouraged. Thank you, Mr. Strachan.
So, Madam Chair, SAVS also has a commercial mandate where it must compete with other private sector players. Of course, in performing its commercial mandate, it also performs a public good on behalf of industry and the reindustrialization program that government is driving. And so this is a very complicated and carefully and requires a carefully calibrated approach. And I'm very happy, Madam Chair, that we will be given an opportunity to come back and report in detail. With respect to the Honourable Mahlobo's question, my understanding is that once the forensic audit is completed, that is handed to the co-administrators of SABS, who apply their minds to that, and then it goes to the shareholder, the Minister of Trade and Industry, and in my understanding, it is the department which then will refer the matter to the South African Police Services as part of that cluster of crime prevention processes. I think I would end there if that's okay, Madam Chair.
Anyone else to speak on the matter? Ms. Goff? Is that Dr. Damana?
Thanks, Chairperson. I just wanted to add that in supporting what Garth has said, that it was a long process. In 2016, in November 2016, the minister met with the board, and he was made to understand that some of the difficulties with the work of SABS had to do with the way that the Standards Act has been drafted. So in that case, we agreed as the department to work with SABS to review the act through the state law advisors. That was done, and a report was given to SABS, but that didn't really help because they didn't implement any of the recommendations. So the fact that the process has taken a long time is not because the department or the minister was not exercising oversight on the matters. There has been a very long engagement, actually. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else then? No. Right. I think, members, we would all agree that the actual date of return should be left with management committee and the secretariat to ensure that our other, you know, the bills, etc., are prioritized. So can we leave that to the secretariat and the Manco, who will then liaise with Ms. Scholz, Mr. Strachan, and others to finalize, and we will let you know. But we would like any relevant documents to be given to the committee as soon as possible so that our own researchers can analyze it. I want to thank you for coming back. And in fact, when I say for coming back, you haven't been here before in this capacity. So of introducing yourselves with these other hats that you are now wearing. And I'm glad that for the most part, we have engaged with you before on other matters, so you do know how we work. Thank you for your cooperation with us here this morning, and we look forward to a further but even more constructive engagement. Thank you very much. Members, you will recall that we are coming back to the debt to finalize those issues that are now agreed to by the technical team, not us, but by Treasury, by Trade and Industry, by our own legal crafter, Advocate van der Merwe. Who is representing this committee in that process? It was Advocate van der Merwe who took our position there. We've issued this two-pager. Does everyone have it? Oh, yeah. And poor Honourable Tierko running between every possible committee here. No, thank you. Now, all right. So what we are going to do, members, I know that most of you were there yesterday when this decision was taken. Dr. Masocha will read what the team wants to give us. It is in relation to honorable members.
It is in relation to Clause 12 and Clause 29. Having said that, we had a lot to say about it yesterday, and we would like the matter to proceed with greater progress. Let me, of course, first acknowledge the CEO, Chief Executive Officer there, who's also joined us, and that is Ms. Machigare of the National Credit Regulator. Mr. Masharpa is here as well, of course. And then, just again, the DDG, Dr. Masocha. I think that's the team that's going to be here. We do have apologies from the Consumer Tribunal and also Advocate van der Merwe, and I see Mr. Komkani here. Members, can we please allow Dr. Masocha to take us through this? Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Morning, honorable members. Morning, colleagues. Yesterday, we were addressing the bill clause by clause, and there were issues raised around clause 12 and clause 29, and the team was requested to go back and look at the proposals in terms of what could be the wording of the two clauses. I won't go through the recap of what happened because it's recent and members were here. So I'll go straight to the two proposals. With 12B, the proposal that was made by National Treasury, it intended to look at the issues around both the unsecured and the secured loans. They had considered the view of the department, and they came up with a suggestion that looked at the approach that should be taken for the secured loans, looking at the repo rate. And yesterday's debates were around how the repo rate could fit into the clause 12. And so what the technical team ended up with in terms of the proposal to address the draft is that the changes, most of the changes will be in clause 29. However, on clause 12 itself, there are two suggestions in terms of how it should be drafted. So the emphasis is that on clause 12, the word prescribed should be added in terms of giving effect to the regulations in clause 29. And also that the wording which says which maximum may be zero to be deleted. One of the concerns was around the fact that the way the certainty around the clause is that the interest rates might be the rate of interest might be taken that it will be zero every time the magistrates look at that particular clause. But then there was a need to do that certainty, so the maximum maybe zero has been removed from that clause. So the way it reads in the circulated document is where it says amendment of Section 86 of Act 34 on B, that's where the proposals are factored in, where you can see where the prescribed is, and also the maximum maybe zero has been removed. And another thing we wanted to just add there, which is not there now, is that we want to say the maximum rate of interest instead of just maximum interest, just to align it to what is in the Principal Act. So it will read as, so CCA, which is in clause B, will read as determining as prescribed the maximum rate of interest, fees or other charges, excluding charges contemplated in Section 101(1)(e) under a credit agreement for such a period as the magistrate's court deemed fair and reasonable, but not exceeding the period contemplated in Section 86(a)(6)(d). So this is how it will reach here. I'm not sure whether I should stop here and allow the discussion.
What I need to do is to read it exactly as you're proposing, you see. So don't say as excluded and this and that, but just read what it is you are proposing, and then we'll come in.
Okay, it will read as determining as prescribed the maximum rate of interest, fees or other charges, excluding charges contemplated in section 101(1)(e) under a credit agreement for such a period as the magistrate's court deems fair and reasonable, but not exceeding the period contemplated in section 86A6D.
Followed by, all right.
Thanks, Chair. DDG is what she's reading and what I'm having is not the same thing. Because CCA, what I'm having there in front of me, what she's reading,
yeah.
Let me read myself.
Three, I mean, you've added.
She's adding some words, and that says different thing. Rate of. There's no rate of.
Rate of.
So
that's why I asked specifically, can you read what we've got? If this is not correct, tell us.
Let me clarify again. Okay, what you have, Honorable Tego, is there. So this is what we have. However, what we've picked up before the meeting was that just for consistency, the maximum interest, we just added rate of interest just for consistency. So it's not there. It's not there, but it's just to ensure that it's included now in the discussions instead of us making it outside the meeting. So we just wanted to bring it in here. It's not on paper, but it's just to...
All right. No, well, let me stop you there, Dr. Masoccio. You see, when I say read from here in a bill, it means it must be here, or you must say, and added in since you got this, is this. So that is important. And in the Principal Act, I can't see a page, but it's Clause 105. It reads, and remember, what are we doing? We are amending this Act. It talks about a maximum rate of interest. So what we're simply doing, or not we, what the technical team are doing, is conforming for the sake of consistency to this. All right? But now, will you physically write that in? Because that is why it was overlooked, it was pointed out to the team beforehand, and they've now added it in. So there's no other addition, but I want to congratulate you, Honorable Tierko, for your sharpness there, huh? Thank you. Honorable Williams?
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I just have a question. They've removed which maximum may be zero. Have they removed it because it implied that it was zero? I mean, that's what you're saying. In other words, because it doesn't say which maximum must be zero, it says may. So there is discretion there for the magistrate. Why aren't we just leaving this in place, just to show them that they can make the interest rate zero if they so choose, and we would be happy with it because it's in the law. And because it says may, it's not. We're not telling them they must make it zero. We're just saying it may be. So I think we can leave it there, Jim.
The point is the preface to that clause is what Dr. Masoccio said. This is read in conjunction with Clause 29. We're not going to repeat it in both sections. So what if you were to... Yes. So now what I'll ask Dr. Masoccio to do before after taking Honorable Tierko is to just, when you come to 29, to re-emphasize the alignment. All right? Honorable Tierko?
Chair, if you can allow that we get the legal advice on this sentence. You change one sentence on an act, you change the whole meaning of everything. So can you get a legal advice on this one? Because what you were is printed in front of us, and the team which is assisting the DDG is not here also. So yesterday we gave instruction to Gibson, Advocate Van der Merwe, together with the department.
So we need to get them, all of them, to agree and tell this is what we have agreed, because what is written here, she's edging on top of that. I mean, I know, once we change one thing, remember there was that thing of...
I do take your point, Honourable Chierko, but the point is the team has clarified this verbally. Honourable Matlobo?
My view is that we must never make a mistake as a committee. These two clauses are read together. That was the instruction to the team. And if they view that the zero has been taken on the other side because the document has been circulated, some of us have read, I'm going to suggest through you, Chair, allow the team, they've read this 12, now let them read 29. After reading the two, our duty is to be able to say, are we both covered because of the relationship between the two? And then we can then adopt or not adopt the amendment in terms of what you did yesterday. But let's allow them to finish, but it looks like they've done a good job.
Honourable Matlobo, that is what we will do, but just to reassure members, the team may not all be sitting here, but thanks to ourselves, they are within verbal shot. All right, Dr. Masocha.
Thank you so much, Chair. This work was a collaborative effort of the team, including National Treasury, and they also confirmed the work. Yes, and Advocate Van der Merwe. We worked on this collectively with the entities as well. The one that around the rate of interest is just to ensure consistency with the Act. It's nothing that is legally outside the bounds of what we are doing. In terms of Clause 29, in Clause 29, just to explain some of the changes that have been made, we use the word repurchase in the clause to align with the Judicial Matters Amendment Act of 2015, and also for the connection with Clause 12, we added reference to Section 87(1)(a)(b), Roman Figure 2, DD, which in the bill, it's on page 10, and if you can go to the bill itself on page 10, it reads as determining the maximum interest, fees, or other charges, excluding charges contemplated in section 101(1)(e) under a credit agreement, which maximum may be zero for such a period as a tribunal deems fair and reasonable, but not exceeding the period contemplated. It's on line 4 in page 10. So that's section 87(1)(a). So on line 4, page 10. So that's another consequential amendment that was made. And also, with this clause, we tried to remove as much discretion as possible for the magistrate tribunal, as well as how the minister may determine the content. And we also looked at the differentiation in respect of the secured and unsecured, where a magistrate is considering the matter. So I will read the clause, Chair, as is. Yes. So B, capital B-I, starts as must make regulations relating to orders that can be made by the magistrate's court and the tribunal in respect of subsection 86(7)(c), Roman Figure 2, CC, large capital A, and section 87(1), capital A, B, Roman Figure 2, DD, respectively, which I was reading now, which is the addition, and must when making the regulations contemplated in subparagraph Roman Figure I, take existing industry standards and practices into account, replicate the requirements set out in the industry guidelines issued by the National Credit Regulator under the Debt Review Task Team Agreement of 2010, and another addition, clearly distinguish between the reduction of interest rate that may be determined by a magistrate in respect of unsecured debt, which reduction may be to zero, and the reduction of interest rate in respect of secured debt, which reduction may not result in the rate being less than the repurchase rate plus such percentage as is indicated in this regard in the industry guidelines contemplated on subparagraph BB, where the repurchase rate is the interest rate set by the Monetary Policy Committee of the South African Reserve Bank as its policy rate and reflects the rate at which commercial banks borrow rand from it as the Central Bank of the Republic of South Africa, thereby serving as benchmark for bank lending in the market, and require the magistrate court and tribunal to first apply incremental and proportional reduction when the maximum interest fees or other charges are considered. Thank you. That's the additional clause 29.
Members, I do think it's almost as if we were with the technical team at the time, and I believe that it has been effectively captured. Now, if it has not, put your hand up. I did say if it is not. Yes, Honourable Tiako?
I'm observing inconsistency here. The last sentence, the DD, they require the magistrate court and tribunal to consider first apply incremental and proportional reduction when the maximum. Here, the DD doesn't say rate of interest. I think I need to be, we need to read. Chair, you don't understand my concern here. Yeah. On the other, on the section 12, she says maximum rate of interest. Then the very same sentence is coming up. She doesn't put that maximum rate off. That's why I need clarity on that one.
Actually, you're right to seek the clarity. Can we immediately get it? Yes, I just want that done straight away, Chair. I mean, Honourable McLaughlin. Yes.
Thank you, Honourable Tego. You are correct. It should be aligned. It should read as maximum rate of interest. Noted.
Is it was changed on the blue and not here where the red is. Now, what as a caution to members as well, so that there is some reduction in our anxiety, remember, we will get a CREDA copy. That CREDA copy will be gone through with a tooth comb. And sometimes there is precisely this kind of error again there. But as long as we have members such as yourself, Honourable Tiako, I expect we can rest assured. And I remember the value, and Honourable Khadebi will remember this, that the Honourable Ariane Ambrosini played when it came to precisely this kind of thing. We would overlook it, the majority of us, and he would pinpoint it. So thank you very much for ensuring that we do send to CREDA a document that is as far as possible without an error in it. Can we please do that, Mr. Hermans? Can I hear Honourable McLaubel?
With your permission, Chair, we'll want with those amendments made and subject to CREDA issues to formally move that the two read together should be accepted. Thank you.
Yes, we would like each clause to be moved separately, you know, like we did yesterday. Honourable Tiako, was that a hand to move?
Thanks, Chair. I move section 12, sir.
Have a seconder, Honourable Williams. Are there any amendments to that? No? Right. Honourable McLaughlin?
I move 29, Comrade Chair.
Yeah, I haven't quite got there.
That's what Williams did to me.
No, but in all fairness, you're quite right.
And we're co-sharing with Williams after they were co-administrators.
I know. Mind you, that's a point to take into account. We can sit here with a full bench. Honourable Williams, you? Right, thank you. Are there any amendments to Clause 29? No. Now, members, we've completed the clause by clause by clause. Yesterday, I noted when the Honourable MacPherson raised something in the memorandum that, yes, one can do this, but then it must, of course, be agreed to by the entire committee. But it will be noted there as part of the report, Honourable MacPherson. Yes?
Can I just address you in terms of procedure going forward, if I may?
Well, I haven't yet got to the procedure. That's why I'm asking.
Okay.
We've now completed the clause by clause.
As explained earlier, we have completed the clause by clause. This will allow Ms. Advocate van der Merwe to submit to the JTM for classification and also to for the Office of the Chief Legal Services in Parliament to prepare a certification document. Once we've received it, we will submit a report which will incorporate those decisions for the committee to adopt. That will be next week, the 4th of September, depending on whether JTM is classified at that stage.
Thank you. So it's my understanding that a committee report will be looked to at next week. And I would believe that in terms of procedure that a minority report may also be attached to that should one be produced.
Chair, where there is no consensus on particular clauses, it will be included in the report. Where there's a minority report submitted, it will be subject to the approval of the committee in terms of the wording and stuff like that.
Honourable Williams.
Chairperson, I just want to take this opportunity to thank the Advocate van der Merwe for the work that she did on this bill, and as I was the former chairperson of the subcommittee, I think that she did an exceptional job on this, and we cannot say, I must be honest and say that without Advocate van der Merwe, we would not have got this bill done to this level. We wouldn't have finished it at all. Thank you.
I think that is truly a statement that does need to be reflected. Honourable McLaughlin?
Well, Chair, well, I know I came late to your committee, but I must commend you with the Secretariat for steering the ship because you know my protest initially when I came with the method of work, but also to thank the team from the department, ably led by the DDG and every others. They've made our work much easier, and we must commend when people, they do a good job. And I think even the method of work has improved a lot, and it's important to tell them, to say, keep up the good work, and we hope that by next week when we meet and conclude the report, we'll be able to put this important work. And also to thank the former chair of the subcommittee, because to come at this stage is not an easy task. And I thought, let me just add to Comrade Williams, but more importantly, for pushing us in the interest of our people. Thank you.
Honourable McLaughlin, did you have a hand up or not, Honourable MacPherson?
Yeah, I actually, is the advocate going to come to the committee? All right, I'll save my response then. But just to Chair, to Mr. Herman, I don't believe that would be a correct procedure for the committee to either adopt or reject a minority report, because a minority report cannot be, your words were it would be up to the committee to include a minority report. So can you just clarify that?
Because, remember, it's still a committee report. the committee is entitled to look at the report and either agree to the to your wording or reflect your wording in a different way. I never said that your committee has the right to reject your. It will be included, but as with any recommendation you made, we do change the wording to reflect what the committee. And remember, it's a committee report ultimately that must be adopted, including your minority report.
MacPherson, what Mr. Hermans is saying, which has happened from time to time, where a minority comment is not being reflected accurately, then you have that opportunity to correct it. Yes?
Just to follow up, is there a draft committee report that will be sent to us before the 4th of September, as is custom?
That's correct. That's the intention, to submit a draft report to all parties for them to look at, and then we will have the report in the committee. And obviously we would like to receive the report, the minority report, prior to the 4th of September.
After
you've received the report, obviously. Yeah. That's what I meant.
So what we're going to do, the minority comments will be reflected, the final document that goes on the ATC. Will have had the committee approval in terms of the accuracy. We may not all agree to what is said in the minutes, which is also a legal document, but we can agree this accurately reflects what took place. I would just like to make one or two comments here. I do want to thank the department, obviously the DDG, Dr. Masocha, who came in halfway through the process as well. We would like to thank the CEO of the National Credit Regulator and her team for also walking this long journey with us, as it were, and for their contribution and guidance in this, and that is Ms. Machigari. Thank you very much. We also would like to thank all members. And yet, I must say this, that the ANC and the DA have been here almost all of the time, probably 80%. And I do know that other parties, as yourself, Honourable Albert, you have made sure you're here at critical moments for this. And yourself, Honourable Esterhazen, I am aware that you have a personal medical challenge and facing you and the family, and that is also taken into account. So we do appreciate it, and this is not to say that we ignore the work of staff. Often the content specialist is not referred to. Ms. Sheldon does a lot of sterling work, as does Mr. Hermans, and my own executive secretary. Sometimes they say, you're not fully aware of the role or the work somebody does until they're not there. I learned this to my cost when she was away for 3 or 4 months. And I want to personally thank you, Ms. Makanda, for keeping me okay. Now look, we are needing to take a position here. Please, Mr. Hermans.
Chair, we have completed the clause by clause. It will now go to CREDA, and we will proofread the clause by clause, how many times we need to do that, and submit a corrected version to the committee on either on Friday or for the latest Monday.
Members, thank you for your application of your minds. The meeting is adjourned. All right. As part of the special trading industry, we are now moving to a joint committee, not only with the Standing Committee on Finance, but also SCOPA, etc. And that is in E249. Members, it is important that we all try and attend that. This is a very critical meeting. Please, thank you. Oh, the 2 o'clock meeting for those few members. Where is